Are you a fan of A Dose of Reality Show? If so, I'm here to tell you that A Dose of Reality Show has their own merch shop available now. The link is in the show notes, but if you can't wait, the website is www.adoseofrealityshow.com and click on the store tab and you will find not only our own merch there, but t-shirts and mugs for podcasters and podcast enthusiasts. Tell your friends and family all about it. You can tag us on social media with your merch on Facebook and Instagram at A Dose of Reality Show. Thank you for all your support. In today's episode, we're having a resilient and inspiring woman that her dreams of going to the military and so many other dreams were shattered by an accident at 18 years old that left her with one leg to stand on. In today's episode, we are talking about not only that, but suicidal thoughts that she went through and so much more. If you know someone, or if you are someone that is contemplating suicide, please get help or please call the number 988. There's help for you. Now, let's get to the show. Hello, hello, hello. I'm Jamila Perez, and welcome to A Dose of Reality Show podcast. And in this podcast, we will be real, unscripted, and at times, real raw. We will have stories of real life, including my own. These stories might have you laughing, crying, inspire, and even motivate you on your daily walk in life. So come with me on this journey while working, having your coffee, or even while you're washing those darn dishes, right? Can't wait for you to listen in, and I'll see you there. Bye. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to A Dose of Reality Show. My name is Jamilette, and I'm so excited because we're finally back. And now I have an amazing guest. Her name is Benita Santillanes. She's a motivational speaker. And I actually met her when we were part of a Boricua Talks panel. And we were the speakers there as well. And that's how we met. And when I heard her story, I told her, I need to bring her on here. So I'm so excited that she accepted. And thank you so much for coming on to my podcast. So tell us a little bit about you and then we could get started.
So I born and raised in Chicago, Latina of... My mom is Norwegian and Lithuanian, and my dad is Mexican and Native American, so I'm half white, half Mexican. Been living in Chicago my whole life. I am a massage therapist as my day job, and I love, my passion is in movies and film and acting and things like that, so that's what I do, directing, producing, things like that, acting. And motivational speaking is one of my passions as well. So, yeah, a little bit about me.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So, I just wanted you to also come on and share with us your story and from your heart, just like you spoke at Boricua Talks, a little bit about your story so that they can know exactly what went on. And wherever you want to start, we can just start.
Okay, so basically, I am a right leg below knee amputee. I was hit by a hit and run drunk driver in June 27th of 1990. I was 18 years old at the time. I was involved in a relationship that kind of became a little bit toxic, and it became violent. And the night before, we got into a big argument where he hit me. And we wound up fighting, and I was going to leave the next day. So as I was getting ready to leave, He lived on the second floor of a two-story apartment, and I had moved in with him to help him recover from a motorcycle accident where he almost lost his leg. He almost lost his leg because he was on the motorcycle, and he was hit by a car also. So, without it becoming like a really story, the main part that happened was I was with one of my best friends, and we were hanging out, the day before and stuff. And then my boyfriend at the time and I were getting ready to go out, and that's how the fight started. So when I was leaving the next day, I was going to church at the time, and a friend of mine told me, his name was Chuck, and he's a police officer. He told me, "Well, you need to leave this toxic relationship. It's not good for you, and this and that." And I was like, "Yeah, whatever. You know how we are. We're like, you're in the relationship, and you can't see outside when people can see from the outside in what's going on, So, what wound up happening was, is as I was leaving his house, I heard this voice, and as I was leaving, because he came home from the hospital and he saw the letter that I wrote him that I was leaving, and he was following me down the stairs, and I heard this voice, and I always say it sounds like James Earl Jones. It's this deep, like, father voice, and it was audible, and the voice said, "Ask his father for a ride." And I turned to my boyfriend and I'm like, "No, whatever." And he's like, "I didn't say anything to you." He goes, "I love you. Don't leave," this and that. So I'm going down the stairs the second time, "Ask his father for a ride." And I'm like, "No, I'm not asking your father for a ride." And my boyfriend's like, "I didn't say anything." And I kept going down the stairs and he's like, "I love you. Don't leave." And I'm like, "Well, this isn't love." And I was on the landing on the first floor. And again, the third time, "Ask his father for a ride." And it was more stern, but it wasn't like aggressive. And the way this voice felt, it was almost like every particle, like the voice was in every particle. Like if you could, you know how the Matrix shows. In the movie The Matrix, it shows the lines on the computer, like the digital code. It's almost like if the word, the voice was everything. Like the voice was coming, the voice was part of the air that I was in. It was part of me. It was part of the banister. It was part of the wall. Like there was no, the only way I can describe it is there was no separation between me, the voice, the stairs, the air. It was like everything was combined together. Like the voice was above me, beneath me, inside me. It was almost like it was supernatural. That's the only way that I can I explain it. It was like a frequency. It was like a, like I was part of it and it was part of me. It's weird to try to describe it. But I turned to my boyfriend and I was like, "No, I'm not asking your father for a ride." Like I was mad, And I go to open the door and there's his father. Now his father lives with him and saw everything that happened. He actually hit him because he said, "I told you don't hit a woman." So when I opened the door, I was embarrassed. And he's like, "Are you okay, mama?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm okay." He goes, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm gonna go get my rental car." He's like, "I'll give you a ride." I was like, "No, it's okay. You don't have to give me a ride." He goes, "Are you sure?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So I walked maybe like his house was two houses from the alley, and then you have like maybe a quarter of a block, if that, before you hit the main street, Cicero. And as I was walking, I had my flip-flops on, I had shorts on, and I had a t-shirt on, and I had my keys in my pocket. I saw this car traveling down Cicero going south. It made a U-turn to go north, And then I was crossing the street. I was crossing the side street. I wasn't yet on the corner. I was like still in a little bit, maybe like 20 feet still in from the corner. And I looked up and I heard boom. And this car jumped the curb and was coming down the one-way street towards me.
Oh my gosh.
And everything slowed down like Matrix, everything, like your brain just, it was so weird. It like slows down. And I'm looking at the car and I'm like, okay, the way the car is coming at me, trajectory-wise, it's coming at me, it's coming towards my right. So if I run backwards, this car is going to run me over. If I jump on top of the hood of the parked car I'm crossing in front of, I may not make it and he may cut my leg off. I go, so let me run forward. But before I did that, I looked at him and he leaned forward over his steering wheel and he gave me this look like, what are you doing in front of my car? He gave me this really strange look. I saw that he had a blue working man shirt on and a blue cap, like a warehouse cap. And I saw there was somebody in the passenger seat, but I didn't see their face. I just saw like their silhouette. And right then and there, he hit me. And he pinned me between his car and the other car. And I went over the right headlight of his car. And I saw my face about to hit the cement. So I covered my face with my hands. And the next thing I knew, I was on my back and I heard the wheels reversing and like driving off. But it was kind of like in the distance because everything was really silent at the time. And slowly the sound came back and I heard the birds. I heard the car in like the distance. I saw the sun shining. I mean, it was like the beginning of a movie, you know, when they start with the sun shining and stuff. It was just like this peace. And I looked down at my body and I'm on the floor. I'm on the ground and my legs are bent, like if you're about to do sit-ups. And the right leg is over the left leg. And I look down my body, but my right breast is exposed because the shirt came up. And there was a piece of my leg, probably about the size of my palm, on my shoulder. And I brushed it off. And I looked down at my right thigh, and it was completely cut open from like my hip, as far as I could see, to my knee. And I grabbed it to hold it together because I wanted to go into the military. I wanted to be a surgical nurse, a trauma nurse in September. And this was June 27th. So I had just graduated high school in 89. And I took a year to go to regular, to just go to college to take some courses so that when I go into the military, I would have some experience, you know, and things like that. So when I saw it, I was like, okay, let me make sure no artery is, you know, broken, I mean, busted and stuff like that. And I tried to pick up my right leg and I could hear the crunching of the bone. So I'm like, okay, let me put my left leg straight so then my right leg being on top of it will actually push both legs down. So when I did that, I could hear the crunching of the bone. And I was like, dang it, I broke my leg. I'm not going to be able to go now. You know, I was mad about
That's all
that.
you were thinking about at
That's all I
the
was thinking about. I'm like,
moment, not
dang,
even the
right? I'm
pain.
like, I know I felt actually no pain. There was no pain. I felt no pain whatsoever. I was fully conscious, fully aware of everything that was going on. When I was finally able to get my leg straight, I grabbed my right thigh to lift up my leg. And from the knee down, it was just, I couldn't see it, but I could feel like as if my leg was just, how do you say it in Spanish, where it's like just hanging?
Guindando. Well, for us in
Like
Spanish, guindando.
malanga or something like that or whatever. I don't know. But
Yeah.
anyways, it was just like hanging there. And I tried to sit up, but at that time, somebody came to try to help me and stuff. And then my boyfriend at the time found out that I was hit by the car and they came down and all this other stuff. And I went to the emergency room at Illinois Masonic, and a friend of mine was there taking x-rays, and my mom made it there and all this other stuff. And the next day, I think it was the next day. Yeah, it was the next day. I wound up calling my friend Chuck from church, and I said, "Hey, you won't know what happened to me." And he's like, "What?" And I told him about the accident. I told him about the voice. And he was like, "What time did this happen?" And I told him it was 10 to 3 in the afternoon, because the bus came at 3 o'clock. And he goes, "Benita, no, it was 10 to 2. I'm sorry. It was 10 to 2." And he was like, "From 2 o'clock," he goes, "from, what was it, 1:30 until 2:30. He goes, "Benita, I was praying for you in the shower that God would spare your life." He goes, "I was binding the spirit of death." He goes, "And I was praying that God would save you from dying." Now, what I didn't tell him at that time was, when I was picked up by the ambulance, they didn't know how I could be, one, conscious, because I lost so much blood on scene. Yet I was also not in pain. They understand that adrenaline, you won't feel pain or anything like that. But with the severity of my injuries, they didn't understand how I was still even able to talk with everything. And I knew that that was God, because the right tibia and fibula was shattered on scene, 6 inches. The only thing holding my leg together was my calf muscle. Otherwise, my leg would have been amputated right on scene. And I don't know how, I can't tell you how scientifically or medically that's possible, to have something like that happen. I can only say for me, it was God. So,
Power of prayer from
yes,
God. And
from
do you feel like going back to the part where, when you heard that voice, did it dawn on you at that time that that was God, or
no.
was this the first time that you had experienced the audible voice of God? Because, not all of us have experienced that voice. Sometimes you're like, oh, this is my head, or this is not the voice of God. Like, you don't know,
It's true.
how did that come about?
When he told me that that was the audible voice of God, I was like, "Really?" Because I didn't hear it. Like, I've never heard it before. But even as a child, I can remember, I've always had this gift to see spiritual things, right? Like, I understand now, being a Christian, that I'm a seer. I have a prophetic gift. I understand that. I acknowledge it, and I know it's not me, it's God working through me. But like, I know this sounds crazy, but that movie, what is it, where he goes, "I see dead people," with that little boy? That's how I was. I had a visitation from my grandfather before. I remember I must have been about 4, 5, 6, something like that. I was sleeping in my bed, and he would always like tease me when he was alive and pull my toes. Like, when I'm sleeping, like, he'd pull my toes to like wake me up. Well, I was sleeping, and I remember, again, it was like around 3 o'clock in the morning, and somebody pulled my toes. I had a little canopy bed, and I got up and I looked, and I remember seeing my little clock, because it was glow in the dark. And I saw my grandfather at the edge of my bed, and he said to me, he goes, "Tell your mom I love her, I love you, and I'm going home." I go, "Where are you going?" And he pointed up, and he goes, I'm gonna be okay. I just came to say, I'll see you later." He didn't say goodbye. "I'll see you later." I said, "Okay, Papa," and I went to sleep. My mom woke me up a few hours later and told me that I have to tell you something about Grandpa. I go, yeah, he went home. He goes, what do you mean? He went home. I said, well, he came to me. He pulled my toes and he told me he was going to heaven. And my mom kind of freaked out. And like, I've had experiences like that. I would be in a room and I would see people, or I would look at somebody. And I remember telling them as a teenager, like, you're going through this, you have this disease. Like, it was always something, like a gift of some sort, you know? But I never had that experience where I heard the voice like that. Now, there's a difference between hearing the audible voice. That was the time I heard the audible voice. But there's times where I hear him in my spirit, if that makes sense. It's not audible, it's internal. The other time that I heard a voice, but I didn't know what it was until the accident, I was going into a 7-Eleven one time, and I was about 15, and I'm walking, and all of a sudden I heard, stop! And I stopped. And a bullet went right in front of my face. I could feel the wind from the bullet hit, and it hit the wood paneling right by the 7-Eleven. And I ducked under the front part of this car that was parked because the gangs were shooting into the 7-Eleven. So that was, looking back in retrospect, that voice was firm and it sounded similar to the voice I heard in the hallway. So that's a time I can remember hearing it, but I didn't know what it was. I thought somebody was around me and they said stop. You know what I mean? Like I didn't know God then. I wasn't going to church at 14, 15. So I didn't know, but I've always had spiritual experiences since I was a kid.
Wow, so God has been preparing you since little.
Yeah.
Wow. So when you got to the hospital, what happened at the hospital? Or no, let's go back. Did they ever get
The guy?
the guy that hit you? Did they?
No, they
No.
never found him. It was a hit and run.
And there was no way like you could describe him where they were able to find him at all, or it was just too much.
Well, there was he was and I say this with much respect because of what's going on now in the world. He was an illegal alien. He had a false name and false ID and everything like that to work in this country. And they said what his name was, but they said he was like in his 50s. I said, no, the guy that I saw was like, 'cause I was 18 at the time, so he looked like he was maybe early 30s. So he was not 50 something years old as his ID and everything said. But he lived on the south side on South Elizabeth Street, and he had two children, as far as what the landlord had told the investigators. One was 10, and I think one was 12, maybe something like that. They were young, or 8 and 10, something like that. Yeah. And he told, when the investigators got there, they got there on like the third week in July, and they spoke to the landlord, and the landlord said that he told the landlord, I have to leave because I did something bad. And he left on July 2nd or July 3rd.
And this
He
is
left. Yeah. So he knew. So what I remember is him thinking about him and the guilt that he must feel,
Oh yeah,
you
definitely.
know, and even though I lost my leg at the time. I had to have the amputation because gangrene has set in and everything like that. And I had to make the choice for the amputation. After I got out of the hospital, I was thinking to myself, because he was drinking and driving. The guy that was in the passenger seat actually jumped out of the car. He was the one that came to help me. And he said that they were drinking. It was like, lunchtime, and they were coming back. So they missed their stop to go to work. That's why he did a 360 on Cicero. So when that happened, I was thinking to myself, this guy, parts of me were on his bumper, on his car.
Oh my
He
God.
had to wash that off.
Yeah.
He had to have known. And they said to me too, with me being Hispanic, they said to me that a gentleman called Illinois Masonic and asked if the girl that was hit on Cicero and Nelson, if she died. And they said that he had broken English, and he wanted to know, did she die? Did she die? Did she die? And they were like, are you her family? We can't tell you anything over the phone. You have to come in. And he goes, please just tell me, did she die? They go, we can't tell you that. So I was thinking, all the guilt he must be feeling, and I didn't want him to feel that guilt, because the reason why is because I'm thinking, if he had children, they're going to suffer
Yeah.
because of his guilt. And I didn't want them to suffer. So I was really hoping and praying that he would know that I forgave him somehow, some way, that maybe he would find God and have a relationship with God, so that he knows that I forgive him and that I don't want that to fall on the backs of his children. I don't want them to suffer because of his guilt. You know what I mean? Because that can fall into the whole family, into the wife, into his marriage, into, you know what I mean?
And if he was already drinking,
Yeah.
would have led him right into the hole of alcoholism and all that
Yeah.
because of the guilt. Because
Yeah.
sadly to say that drives people to drink even more when you
Yeah.
have that guilt.
And coming from my dad growing up was an alcoholic. So we didn't know if when he was drinking, if he was going to come home a happy drunk or if he was going to come home a violent drunk. So I had that to fall on too, that that would make it even more difficult for him. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
And how did all this affect your family, like with your parents and everything? Was it did it unite you guys more because of this situation, or did it did you distance yourself from them because of the situation?
Well, my parents were divorced at the time. My
Okay.
dad was no longer drinking.
Okay.
But my mother and my father, they had a good relationship, you know what I mean, after their divorce and stuff. My mom had remarried and everything. So my dad came to the hospital. My mom was in the hospital with me. They were both a support, but my mom, I have to say, was more of a support.
Mom.
Then my mom, I shouldn't say more of a support, but my mom was strong. You know how mothers are. They're like the backbone of everything. I mean, she
Yeah.
took pictures of when they uncovered my leg after treatment, and we had to make a decision what we were going to do to amputate or try to save it and stuff. She took all those pictures, and she was my rock. She was the one that stood there and helped me through everything, you know. I mean, my dad was too. My dad, it's funny because my dad used to work downtown for the Carriage House. It was like a hotel thing. He was the maintenance guy, and next door was Eli's Cheesecake. So he would bring e slices of Eli's Cheesecake to the nurses. And what they would do is they would allow my friends to come after visiting hours, but we would go on another floor where there was hardly nobody, and we would stay until midnight. And then they would let them go. And my dad would like take me out of the hospital, like escape me from the hospital, take me to go get ice cream or something, and then bring me back. That was my cool. That was my dad. You know what I mean? That was him. And my mom was the more like stern one, you know. Don't be doing that to her. She's got to stay here, you know, but my mom was always the strong one, yeah, in that sense.
And how long were you at the hospital after, for recovery and everything?
Yeah, I was in the hospital from June 27th until August 1st. And when I got out of the hospital August 1st, my best friend was with me, and oh my goodness, I could not wait. I could not wait to get home, and she came home with me. And that's how when I got home, I told my mom that I wanted to go dancing. She's like, "How are you gonna go dancing? What do you mean you want to go dancing?" I'm like, "Mom, I've been in the hospital this whole time, almost the whole summer. I'm like, I want to go dancing." And there was a Weber dance. It was a high school, and my best friend Rosie came with me, and she's like, "How are you gonna dance?" I said, "Well, I'll just put on some shorts and I'll put my little leg through where you put your hands, and I'll stand on the crutch and we'll dance." And she's like, "All right, let's go." So we were about to go, and I was gonna get in my car to drive. She goes, "Wait a second, how are you gonna drive?" I said, "Well, I'm gonna learn right now. We're gonna figure it out." She's like, "What do you mean?" I said, I got my other foot. I learned how to drive with my other foot." So I'm like, "Buckle up." So she buckled up, and for like a block, I would, with my left foot, I would press the brake and press the gas and the brake and the gas. And I was like, "You ready to go?" She's like, "Yeah." We jumped on the expressway from Des Plaines to Chicago, and that's how I taught myself how to drive.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Taught
You
myself how to drive just like that. Because, you know, it was more like I was just stubborn. I didn't want no one to take care of me and stuff. I wanted to figure it out myself. So that's what I did.
Yeah, and that helps a lot of people, because when you get to the point where just like my pastor was recently preaching about on Sunday, like the whole woe me kind of tour,
Yeah.
and actually talking about that. So this is a perfect example. Like if you would have been in the woe me tour, you would have never done everything you have done
Yeah.
since, you could have still have been just laying in that bed, feeling sorry for yourself and done nothing for yourself. And
Yeah.
everybody, because you did have a legitimate excuse of
Yeah.
not doing nothing if you wanted to.
For sure.
And that's
Absolutely.
unfortunately that's what a lot of people do. So,
Yeah.
but it's all about mindset. It's your mindset. It's about your trust in God and your faith, and you gotta keep on being strong to continue, or else that will destroy
Yeah.
you.
And I mean, and I at first I didn't see myself as being different because of the friends and family I had around me. My friends would carry me on their backs, you know, give me piggyback rides and stuff like that if I got tired in my crutches. We were still joking around. We were still like, you know, they were thinking of different names for me. They were calling me Thumper because I was hopping everywhere on my one leg. We were joking that now I got handicap plates, so I was the one taking them everywhere and driving, or I would bring my hang tag because now we got VIP
Yes,
parking. And
the
you know, I mean, it was just fun things like that, and it was good for a while. And then, you know, then reality hits, you
Yeah.
know. I mean, reality hits, and it wasn't because of me. It was because I was at a party, and I got back with my ex-boyfriend, and he wound up telling one of my girlfriend's boyfriends that he doesn't find me sexually attractive anymore because I lost my leg. So I didn't know that. So we were at this party, and at this time, I did have the prosthetic. I was walking on the prosthetic already. And man, this sets me up big time. You remember TKA? The group TKA? It was a boy band, and it was three guys. There, it was like one was like Carmel, the other one was like cafe con leche a little bit, and the other one was like chocolate. You know what I mean? Like, and I forgot their names, but it was called TKA. And the darker one came up, and my girlfriend's boyfriend told me, "Why are you still with him?" He told me that you were no longer together because he doesn't find you sexually attractive, and you're better than that, Benita. You're better than that. You know, that's not who you are, and this and this and that. And I cried, and the guy from TKA came down. He's like, "Mamita, what's wrong?" I'm like, "Well, my boyfriend said I'm not sexually attracted because of my leg and this and that." He goes, "Really?" He goes, "Come on up with us." He goes, "You got friends here?" I'm like, "Yeah." So he goes, "Come on, come up in the VIP party with us. And you know, you're beautiful and you don't have to worry about that." And like, he was encouraging me. So we went up there and we were with them the whole night. And we left my ex-boyfriend there out by himself. He wound up going home. But it was like, after that day, I saw myself differently. I did really start to see myself as an amputee. And that's where, looking back now, I understand the power of words. I didn't know the power of words back then. And it's been 34 years now that sometimes, even when I'm having, I don't say bad days, I say challenging days. When my leg hurts, or when something happens, or when I want to put on a dress or something, and I see the prosthetic is like a different color because the skin from the dye of my pants has changed it or whatever, those words still creep up sometimes. And now I understand the power of words. So I'm like, no, that is not who I am. My leg doesn't define me. My who I am in my soul and my spirit is what defines me. You know, it's not the color of my hair or my curves or my voice or whatever. That is how people perceive me physically, but that's not who I am at my core. Because the outside will always change. The inside doesn't. The inside can change as you grow, but who you are at your core will never change. You know, that's your essence. That's what makes you, you know, Yamilet. That's what makes me Bonita. That's, you know what I mean? We all have a gift, and that's never going to change the essence of who we are. I realized that now. Then I didn't. And it brought me to a place where I tried to commit suicide because of it. Or I actually did commit suicide, and God brought me back. So, yeah. You're like,
This, I'm telling you, for the listeners that are listening to this and will listen to this, this is an impactful story. I'm not sure if you want to leave it here or if you want to continue on this,
continue, honey. I'm an open book. I don't
because
care.
now you just opened up that part, like, wait a minute, now what happened, like, how, in that time, when what age did that happen? Did it, was it like years later after the
No,
fact, or like the same year?
I turned 19 in the hospital in July, and it was maybe, it was before the year ended, so I want to say maybe October, September. So it wasn't that long. It wasn't that long. It was a couple months after, a few months after. It was a Sunday, actually. It was a Sunday. I was at home, and my mom and my brother were in the yard. My mom was doing yard work, I remember, because it was an unusual day because it was warm out when it's supposed to be cold in September, October. And I remember my stepfather wasn't, I don't think he was home, but He had heart pills that he would take for his heart in the cabinet. And I kept thinking to myself, well, who's gonna love me? My boyfriend finds me, or my ex-boyfriend, because I broke up with him then. My ex-boyfriend found me unattractive now. I'm missing my leg. How I want to have kids. How am I gonna run after them with a prosthetic? What if I'm not fast enough and they get hit by a car or they fall or they, something? I'm missing something that makes me a woman that I thought back then made me a woman, having sexy legs and this and that. How are people going to look at me now? And after hearing what he said about me, that changed me. It changed the perspective of myself, how I viewed myself when I didn't see myself as anything different before. I had an accident. It's just like somebody broke their arm or something like that. Like, I didn't feel any different until he said that. And again, I didn't hear him say it until somebody told me he said it. It changed me. And I started going into all these what ifs that didn't even happen yet. My mind is like, well, what if this and what if that? And you're never going to find somebody to love you. And I mean, can I be raw on this
Yes,
video?
this
I
is
was
what
thinking to
it's
myself, even intimately,
all
how is somebody going to want to look at you intimately?
about.
You know what I mean? Naked in bed, missing a body part, like that's going to look grotesque. Like that's where that's my cat, sorry. That's where my mind went. And it kept going that night over and over and over again. And it was during the day. And I said, you know what? I just can't do this anymore. So I went in the bathroom and I took my stepfather's heart pills and I laid down in my room. Now my mom was in the backyard. My brother was home and I could have went to them for help, but I didn't. I just felt this overwhelming pressure that at 19, back in 1990, there wasn't many amputees my age back then. It was all older people that lost their leg from diabetes or something like that. I didn't see, and you didn't hear about people that were amputees until, unfortunately, after the wars we've been in Iraq, these men and women come home and they have prosthetics, and now prosthetics are the bomb. You can do anything with them, But back then it wasn't like that. I had what they call a geriatric leg. It was heavy. It looked like foam, but with a nylon over it. You know what I mean? And it was fine. It worked for me. I made it work. But so I took his pills, and I started to feel my heart like racing, and then it started to slow down. And at that time, I heard, like, on one side, I heard like these demonic growls and like, we got you and we're gonna get you, and like just these horrible things in this demonic voice. But on the other side, because I cried out to God, I'm like, God, I'm so sorry that I did this. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And I'm like, please, God, forgive me. At the last moment, this is what I'm thinking. This is what's going on in my head, but I can't speak. I can't move. I was almost like paralyzed in my own body. And I could hear on the other side like this peace. And it wasn't like the voice before. It was more internal, but like spiritual, where like, it's okay. We have you. You're going to be okay. Because I was crying out to God in my brain, like, God, please don't let me die. I don't want to go to hell, for committing suicide. And I respectfully say that for people that may have known somebody that has committed suicide, but I can say from my experience, I believe because it happened to me, you have that moment where you can repent. So this is not to say that because somebody committed suicide, they're not in heaven, because they could be, because you have that,
Have a chance to repent.
you have that, again, in my experience, you have that. And I feel like I need to say this for somebody listening. You have that moment of clarity. You do, and I'm getting goosebumps all over me right now. You have that moment of clarity that of what you did of your life. And when people talk to you about God and what you know, you have that clarity and you are able to repent. And I understand that some people may take their life because of a demonic oppression of either, they're bipolar, they're off their meds, or they do have a mental illness, which we know is spiritual, and they're under the influence of a spirit, and they take their life. But you have that moment of clarity. And at that time, I went to go call my cousin, and the phone was dialed. I was busy. Do you remember back then? You get the busy tones.
Yes,
And
I hated that.
somehow, I don't know, I called the operator. The operator broke through. I was able to talk to my cousin. And all I heard come out of my mouth was like, wah, wah, wah. Like I heard slurring. But somehow she understood. I don't know what happened. And all I know is that I heard the ambulance coming and I heard my mom scream, "No, not my daughter." They busted in my room. They were checking me and they were like, "We have no pulse. There's nothing here." And I'm looking at them and I'm screaming in my mind, like, "No, I am here. Like, I am here. I am not dead. Don't pronounce me dead. I'm here." And they wound up bringing me back. And the first thing I said was, "Is don't let me die. I want to have kids. Like, don't let me die. I want to have kids. 19 years old, here I am. Don't let me die. I want to have kids." When I was thinking before, what am I going to do with kids? How am I going to run after them, So after that, you just realize how precious life is, and how merciful God is, and how good He is, and how, man, you just learn so much,
Man.
you really do.
Yeah, it just it didn't dawn on me until you said that about, people that have gone through the suicide, because you always think, oh, maybe they just went straight to hell, but that didn't dawn on me until you said it. It's like they might have had a chance. We don't know. We do not know. They might have had that chance to repent right before, and God, with His mercy and His grace, come on, come on home.
The Bible says that God judges our heart, and it's like at that time. So I understand why people commit suicide, right? Because the pressure and the pain is so intense, and you just want it to stop. Whatever that pain is, if it's physical pain, if it's mental pain, if it's emotional pain, you just want it to stop. It's like your physical body can no longer take the pain. The meds don't work. This doesn't work. That doesn't work. And you just want it to end. And you can't see a way out. And that's why people do it. That's why I did it, because my mind got into such a place that it kept recording in my mind, what if, 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 what if. And none of that even happened yet. And we know now that that's the enemy, girl, putting those thoughts in our head and in our minds that haven't even happened yet.
Yes.
But what happens when we speak them out? It becomes a self-fulfilled prophecy. But I could have gone to my mom and say, "Hey, I need help." And that's what I encourage people to do if they're listening to this, if they're feeling that, I just want this pain to stop, whatever pain it is. Tell somebody. Like, it's okay to be vulnerable. I'm sure the person you would tell would be there, has been in that situation too. We've all felt that where we just want to give up, we can't take it no more. You just want to like you just want it to end, and that's the only thing you know of. But you and I both know, and those who are listening that serve God, when you leave this life, It doesn't end.
Yeah.
Go to one place or another because you're spirit and you live forever. And it's either in heaven or in hell, whatever that may be for you, you know, in that sense of whatever the torment may be,
Yeah.
you know. And I don't want anybody to go there, you
Yeah.
know, if people are struggling with thoughts of suicide, know that it's a spiritual stronghold. You know, it's a spiritual stronghold, and to get help, to talk to somebody,
Yeah.
even if it's a stranger, calling up the suicide hotline or something, going to your pastor, going to your best friend, go somebody
Yeah.
to help you. And don't let them put it off like, oh girl, you're just going through this, or oh dude, you're going through this. No, I need help.
Yeah.
You know, it's true.
That's true. And that's when you really need to know who you surround yourself with as well.
Yes. And you're so right about that. And it's not being with people that are like, oh girl, come on, we just need to go out and have a drink. Or,
Yeah.
oh dude, come on, let's just go get some girls and let's, you know, you just need to release sexually, or let's go smoke, or let's do this. It's not about that. It's about, I need to get my mind right.
Yeah.
You know, I need to talk this through. I need somebody to give me a hope that what I'm feeling is real and that I am being heard.
Yes.
It's not about pushing it down and not talking about it or finding an escape. It's actually dealing with whatever it is, you know, emotional, physical, spiritual, whatever, mental, you know, it's so true.
Now fast forward to now. What have you accomplished? How do you feel like what have you accomplished throughout this trajectory? Is
Yes.
it right? From that 18-year-old to now, like
Man,
what
girl, let me
you have
tell you,
accomplished
there's
that
so
you can give
much.
hope to others and say, hey, you can do this, you know, because I did it kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, it's I realized that we don't have bad days. We consider it a bad day because of our perspective of that day or of that moment. But is it really? Or is it a lesson that we need to learn? Or is it our surroundings telling us that we need to slow down and we need to pay attention in life and we need to just be more aware? You know, like I've had challenges throughout. Since then, I went through breast cancer, had to have a bilateral mastectomy with implants back in 2018. I had a partial thyroidectomy back in 22 because they thought it was cancer. I had my cervix removed because they thought it was cancer. I had a partial hysterectomy when I was 30, 37. So I was never able to have kids. I never did get my children. But it's, and I can look back on that and I can be bitter, right?
Oh,
I
yeah.
could be angry. I
Yeah.
could be mad at God. Why did you
Oh.
allow this to happen? Why did you allow this? But the truth of the matter is, and I'm speaking for myself, is that I made choices. I made choices to marry my ex-husband, who is a great man, but I married him when I backslid from church. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And my perspective of what I wanted in life was different. Now, I don't regret that the 20 years that we were together. I learned a lot. But during that time, I made choices where when we got married, he said that he wanted children. He already had a son, but then he said, "Oh, no, I don't want children. Let's just focus on our life and traveling together." Now, I say this with much respect. There's men that are great people, but they're not good fathers. That doesn't take away from them being a good man. They just don't have that fatherly instinct. And looking in retrospect, that's who he was. He was a good man, but with his son that he had from a previous marriage, there was hardly no contact. I was contacting him. So now I can imagine if I would have had children with him, I would be a single parent. And that would be okay, but that wasn't God's plan for my life. You know what I mean? Like God says he works everything out for his good. I may have made these choices where I could say, "Oh my goodness, I didn't have my children, that's a bad thing," or, "Oh, I went through breast cancer and that's a bad thing," and, "Oh, I lost my leg and that's a bad thing." But no, I would not have the platform I have today to talk about these things had these things not happened to me. So I choose to look at the good part of it. Yeah, I went through a hell of a lot of struggle. But through going through breast cancer, I learned and I say was. I was always a person, it's easy for me to help others and to love others, but it was a challenge for me to receive.
Steve, yeah, I'm
It
saying.
was a challenge for me to ask for help. It was a challenge for me to allow people to love me in acts of service like I love them, right? But when I went through breast cancer, I couldn't wash my own hair. So my girlfriends came over and washed it for me. I had strangers that I only met on the internet, on Facebook, through Facebook that came through and brought me soup. And one of my clients, she actually set up a service for people to give her money or donate food to her so she could bring to me. Now, I was fully capable of cooking myself and everything, but just allowing her to do that, allowing her to show her love for me was a blessing for her. And, I ate some of that food, but then I passed some of it on to somebody else, that was sick and stuff. So you learn from it. And what I've learned now, being 52, is that it's so important to one, get up every morning with gratitude. Like, truly start off my morning with, "God, thank you for waking me up today. Even though I might be in pain, even though I may be struggling in certain areas in my life, I realize the power of my confession. I realize the power of my attitude. And I realize that no matter what, God is always good." And that's what I base my life on now. I've just been going through, you don't know this, but for the last 9 weeks, I've been going through sciatica on my left side. And I had to go to the emergency room because a couple weeks ago on a Monday, my mom took me because the pain was so intense that I was at a place that I have never been before, emotionally and mentally, going through that pain, that nerve pain, that doesn't stop. When I went into the emergency room, there was a girl there. And this is what I talk about God. It's like there was a girl there. She was pacing the room. I'm pacing the room because I have a right leg prosthetic and then the left leg sciatica that was going down the nerve pain. And I couldn't put pressure on my left leg, but then I can't feel my right leg either and trying to walk, So I'm in the emergency room and I'm with my mom and I see this girl and she's crying. And I'm like, "What's the matter, mama? What's the matter?" She's like, "Well, I have a cyst on my brain And yesterday was my birthday, and she goes, so I took myself out of the hospital, but today it hurts again. And I came back because it's so bad. And she's just crying. And I said, come here. And I grabbed her and I go, let's cry together. And I'm holding her and I wanted to pray for her. And it was like she kind of received a hug. But in my mind, when I started to pray for her, she kind of got a little bit like squirrely, I call it. Like, it was uncomfortable. So I let her go and I said, you know what? I said, you're going to be just fine, Mama. You're going to be just fine. I said, you're in the right place. I'm glad I met you. I said, you're strong. You can do this. God loves you, And I'm like thinking, man, I'm over here in pain myself and I'm over here trying to love on her, I'm like, maybe that was the reason why I went through what I went through to be in the emergency room, to be able to love on her just for that one moment. So when I went in, my blood pressure was at 177 over 111, and that was high. So, long story short, they sent me to a spine thing or whatever, and they said that there's a synovial cyst on my spine, on the L4, L5, and that that's what's causing the sciatic, the pinched nerve, and there's some degenerative disc disease, and there's all this stuff. And I'm thinking, I came home and I was like, you know what, God? I said, I'm grateful for the doctors and stuff. And I said, the surgeon wants to do surgery, but I'm like, Lord, you're my healer. You're the one that can do creative miracles. You're the one that brought me out of breast cancer. You're the one that brought me out of all these things. You're the one that's doing it. I've seen you do things like this before. I've seen you do creative miracles. I said, God, I'm trusting in you. And I said, and I'm aligning myself with your word. I said, yeah, I see what they see in the natural. I said, but they don't know the God I know. They don't know the God that I know that can part the Red Sea, that can, make these dry bones live, that can, raise the dead, that can do all these things. They don't know that God that I know. I said, so Lord, I'm trusting you either way, what it is. I'm believing that when they go and they look at my, when I have to go back to the doctor next week, Wednesday, that they'll be like, well, we don't know what happened, but it's gone.
And that
That's
could
where
happen.
my faith is. That's what I'm believing,
That
and we'll go from there. That's all I'm going to say is we'll go from there.
Yep.
But I'll tell you, since I made that decision, it's been 6 days that I have not been in pain.
Wow.
Now, I am still taking the one muscle relaxer and I'm taking one gabapentin that's like 300 milligrams. I am taking that. Yesterday, I had a little bit of a nerve pain and I was like, nope. I said, in the name of Jesus, I am healed, I am whole, and I am pain-free. Through
Amen.
my tears, girl, tears, I was like, God, I am healed, I am whole, and I am pain-free. I trust your word. So it's like, even with that, I understand now going through sciatic pain and this unrelenting nerve pain, why people that go through nerve pain do, like what we said before, commit suicide because you want the pain to stop, or that are addicted to prescription drugs. I understand that now. And you asked me, what have I learned? I learned that in life, nothing, it's never going to be, and this is not being negative, but it's never going to be perfect. Being a Christian is not saying that we have a perfect life. We don't. As a matter of fact, there might even be more challenges for us because the enemy comes against us, But no matter what, I trust God. God is good. I'm going to come out of this. And he's going to get the glory, however he chooses to have it happen. My faith is that they're going to go and they're going to be like, well, we don't know what happened, but there's nothing here. If by chance it goes another way, so be it. I just look for opportunities that are unexpected, where I can reach people and help them and give the glory to God. So, however that appears or shows up in my life, if it's through me going through something, what I'm going through, or what I have gone through, I'm grateful. And it's funny because my boyfriend is always like, you know what I love about you? He goes, is that you could see, he goes, you could see the worst thing happen or whatever. And, you know, I'm always like saying, oh, but look at this, look at that. And you always got to find the silver lining to everything.
Yes.
And I said, but I can't see it any other way. Like, I can't see it any other way. There's always something positive. You just have to look for it sometimes. You know?
You'll stay there and
So that's what I learned. Now, don't get me wrong. Let me tell you, when I was going through that pain, I said a couple curse words and I was pretty mad. I'm not gonna be up here
You're
like,
human.
oh, I'm
We're
strong.
our
This
flesh.
is no, man. I was telling you, me and God had a conversation. And I was not happy because I talked to God like I'm real. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? Why are you alive? What's going on? Oh, I'm in pain, you know. But I'm grateful though. I'm grateful, girl, for everything. That's you gotta be like that, you know.
That's so inspiring. You inspire a lot of us. You definitely, and to end it here, I think is perfect, spot on right here. Where would anyone like that wants to connect with you if somebody, has just gone through an amputee kind of situation and they want to talk to you about it or have some advice or things like that? How would they be able to connect with you? At this time.
Well, I'm on social media under my name, Benita Santillanes. They can look on there. Facebook, my Facebook is open to the public. I don't have it private. So is my Instagram. So they can contact me through there, just Benita Santillanes, look it up. And they'll see it on each of them. It'll say amputee motivational speaker. And they can reach out to me through there. You know,
And I'll
I'm
put
working.
that on the show notes as well,
Yeah.
so anybody
And
can.
I'm working on a website that'll have, it'll be my name, but that it'll have like the motivational speaking, it'll have the comedy that I do on there. It'll have you know, all these different things. Oh, July 21st, it's a Sunday. I'll be doing at Joe's on Weed Street with Mikey O. They're gonna be having an event there for storytelling for to raise money for an organization. So I'll be there that day if people want to come out. It'll be a July 21st on a Sunday, I think. And it's actually my birthday. So I'm excited about that.
Maybe I could try to swing by because
Yeah,
I love
absolutely.
going to Joe's at Weed Street.
Yeah, Mikey O's the best, man.
Yes, definitely he is. Okay, awesome. So thank you so much for coming on to the show. I appreciate you and I come out of here inspired as well and
Thank you.
motivated but for those that listened to this, just know that at the end, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
And don't give up. Don't give up. And if you're in that midst of you want to give up, don't give up that towel. Like don't put it away. You just keep on going and you keep on running the race because that's what we're running right now is a race. So,
Yes.
but thank you so much for listening to today's episode. And until next time, bye. Thank you all for joining me on this amazing journey with my show, A Dose of Reality Show. I'm so excited to hang out with you every Wednesday to share stories of hope, strength, and bring awareness along the way. You can also tag me on social media and tell me how these stories have helped you along the way. It's on Instagram and Facebook at A Dose of Reality Show. In the meantime, please subscribe to my podcast channel and leave a review. I'd love for you to be part of these stories, and I will see you next week for another episode of A Dose of Reality Show. Bye.